It is Monday, the 12th of July, and you're listening to episode 54 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome along to our latest episode. I am Chris, and I am joined today by Ian.
Good evening, Chris.
Oh, you're sounding nice and smooth.
Different.
What's different?
I have new hardware.
Hey.
So I have a Rode Podcaster.
I think, I assume you did a bit of a look up on what were good mics and stuff, so I think we need a review on our site, don't we?
If it turns out to be all right.
Yeah, well, we'll get some feedback on that.
I've only had it plugged in a couple of hours. And even then, due to total fail, I was convinced it wasn't working. But no, anyway, I'm quite in build quality. And so two things I could mention about it. Build quality is excellent. You know, really, really sturdy gear. And the boxes were superb.
Always need a good box.
Always need a good box. Very Apple-esque. Even had a sticker inside. So you get I guess to anybody listening, it's no use, but I can show you the sticker. Lovely sticker.
To put where? Never mind. Anyway, so I look forward to listening to the audio output when it gets through to the site.
We're tempting fate. You know it's just going to fail tonight. Something yes. Horrible is going to happen.
We have a fair amount to get through, so let's crack on with some news. And we're going to start on a section around broadband and what's been going on this week. And we're going to start on how the government are spending lots of money on iPhone apps at the moment.
Well, they did spend lots of money. I think this is the end of the iPhone apps. So they released some prices last week. I guess a couple stood out. A DVLA Masterclass app cost $40,000. Job Centre Plus, $32,500. A lot of money, especially as most people pointed out, would somebody at the job centre really have an iPhone and be paying for it and be
downloading?
Well,
it got downloaded, you know, how many times? 50,000 times?
It was 50,000 downloads. So what's that? 60p a download?
And I have to, yes, and the story is obviously highlighting how much money is spent on these things. Partly that's due to the way that, you know, government and local authorities spend their money, which is they require local companies to jump through hoops to do things, and that always incurs costs. And they could probably, you know, for the equivalent apps, you could probably get a developer to do it for you for a lot less than they end up paying. But I still think the direction of government going into mobile apps is probably the right one long term.
It's encouraging to see, but I still think that maybe adapting the web content is a better way forward.
And that's I mean there's a whole another story around how much they spend on that, isn't there? Every year there's they spend 94 million on website development. Is it last year?
This was
2009. Yeah. So it's probably gone up.
And 32 million on staff.
The way the local government works is that they send out lists to people and say, you must tick the boxes. You must do this, this, and this. So every single local authority does their own thing. So that obviously incurs massive charges and massive costs, which could be done, could be done in a more joined up way. But at the end of the day, say that 32 million on staff costs, it actually that keeps people employed, and they're probably not employed on massive salaries.
No, the problem with these kind of stats is it value for money? And unless you saw the traffic and how much people were getting out of these sites, you know, just on a very cold it looks expensive, but you'll get no idea what they're actually doing. Actually understand what information does that entail? How many people are hitting these sites? Are people finding it useful?
Exactly. And even if it isn't initially, you know, particularly well used, I still say I think the direction of it is correct and will be used more widely going forward. So maybe not such good value now, but maybe going forward it is still the direction you want to be headed in. I guess on a similar bent is how the BBC uses their money on their online services. Now, I read this story and thought, wow, the whole BBC website and all the online services only cost 67p a month. other people have read this and thought, it costs 67p a month for that.
I know. And I think the BBC online, I think the output as a whole is tremendous. I'm quite happy that it costs that much per month. So overall, it's just under 200 million a year.
So 200 million a year. If I had to actually, if someone said, you know, what would you be willing to pay to access the BBC, all the iPlayer content, and that would be a heck of a lot more than 67p a month.
Aye, absolutely.
And I know that part of the reason that people quibble is because only 37% of the, you know, population end up using the services. So they're thinking, you know, is that 200 million, could that be spent better ways in for something else? But I'm just not sure they could. How much more money do you want to throw at programming? Or
well, the good thing with these stats is you actually get you get some context to it. So BBC Online is reaching 37% of the population each week. There's more than 18 million iPlayer requests per week. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Again, iPlayer, how long's that been around for now? Are we talking 4 years, maybe, something like that?
Oh, I was going to just say about 2.5, 3.
So it's not very long. I mean, but it's in the general consciousness, isn't it? Everyone talks about, you know, iPlayering it.
Yes. Oh, no, to me, it's a given service now. And going back to your point about, you know, the government spending and it keeps people gainfully employed, the BBC Online spend just over 25% of that. And I think it's been set by a quota that 25% must be paid out, or it must be supplied from external suppliers. So again, it's going back into the economy. But BBC Trust has endorsed a 25% budget reduction. So we will see certainly far fewer sites online from the BBC.
And what they were saying a little while back with that, well, that would mean that they were going to cut back massively on local news reporting, leaving that to local newspapers and thing and whatever. Again, I don't necessarily think it's a positive thing. And I think any reduction in the budget, for me, I mean, I guess I'm in the wrong sector to be sort of looking at this from an objective point of view, but I think the younger generation certainly want to see this. They don't want to see a budget reduction, do they? They want to see more stuff, not less.
Were you saying that because you work in the Weatherminster or because you're not young anymore?
I'm trying to imply that out. I'm still quite young, but I'm also in the web industry, so obviously I want more of the stuff anyway.
I think the BBC spend for me sounds fine. I think the content they do and the... I mean, even you probably didn't have a chance because you were a lucky dog and were at Silverstone at the weekend.
Oh, yes.
But I forgot
to mention that as my intro, didn't I?
Yeah.
I've only just got back. I'm a little bit pink because it was boiling hot, but it was a wicked weekend.
Oh,
well done, the Brits.
It looked an awesome weekend. Says me that sat on a couch watching it. Not quite the same. But one of the they had one of those, I don't know the right name for it, but they had an online tracker. So during the race, you could actually see who was where on the track.
And they had that on the website, did they?
Yeah.
Because I know that I know that there's an app on the iPhone that will do that, but yep. It costs you.
It costs 20 quid.
Yeah, and it doesn't work at Silverstone. I did it 2 years ago. I bought that app, and it doesn't work at Silverstone because the signals. Well, you don't get a mobile signal.
No, and the reason I never bought it is so many people slag it off and says it's not reliable enough. If you compare it to even the. They're just going to the F1 site, you know, during a race. It's not as up to date as that. But they had an app at the weekend, and they're going to bring it back for more races.
Brilliant! Okay, I mean, every single Formula One car now contains a GPS device. Am I going off on a track tangent? I think I might be. It has a GPS device, which is now fully updating those apps. So the data's out there.
Oh, the data is out there. There's people have been starting to do mashups now.
But I don't know if it's all fully released. I don't know if they're scraping that data.
I think McLaren have released some of their data. Yeah, okay. So they're releasing some of it. And there was a guy who had done a mashup on a Google map. So you can see here's all the braking zones for Hamilton. Here's all the ones for, you know, Button over the race weekend. And he was doing just like comparisons of where they broke ever so slightly differently. Which is probably going way off tangent. Sorry, listeners. Listener. Okay,
let's bring it back to some broadband stuff. So Finland. This week have announced that they are going to make broadband a legal right.
Aye.
So they're taking this a step further from where our government have announced that they will have a, I'm not sure what they call it, a commitment to everyone having 2 meg broadband. Finland have said it's actually going to be a legal right, and that's obviously a much stronger statement that every Finn will be able to get 1 megabit per second. I'm not sure timescale connection by 2015. Nope.
Yeah, but the only thing to bear in mind is kind of different to the UK. Currently, they reckon 96% of the population are already online, and that leaves about 4,000 homes to be connected. So the headline sounds great, but it's talking about getting some 4,000 homes online, which isn't a bigger commitment. But one other part of their commitment is that they've vowed to connect everyone to 100 megabits per second connection by 2015. And that
okay,
is...
Okay, so, and again, I don't know, they're obviously not going to say that's illegal, right?
No. But that's the kind of the woolly equivalent of what the UK government's saying here about the 2 meg connection.
Yes. I mean, for me, the strongest bit of this story is the fact that they, by making it a legal right, they can't do things like chop people off the internet for file sharing.
No.
So
very good point.
I think for me, that's almost the biggest story out of this, which is, and I think Finland have announced that they're not going to have such draconian laws based on file sharing. It is going to be a, you know, warning letters probably ad infinite.
But it's also for quite a while now, and I've been laughed at for saying it, but I knew class broadband as a utility. You know, if I was buying a house, it needs to have broadband.
I think broadband would come into my buying decision if I was buying a house.
Yep. And you know, something like this, to say it's a legal right, the same way that I should have access to water or electricity or gas, you know, it's this is now a utility.
Well, there have been reports this week that also say that the BT estimates of how much it will actually cost to get everyone on a fibre network are probably grossly overstated, based on the figures that they've recently released for how much it got to get a village online and fibre to the cabinet. I think, you know, BT was saying initially that it's going to cost $5 billion to do all this, but their latest figures for doing this one village would suggest, you know, much, much less, you know, $1.5-2 billion.
And it's odd, I don't know anybody that's signed up to that fibre to the cabinet yet. You know, so asking around my colleagues at work and nobody's switching over. Again, probably being in Glasgow, slightly lucky in the amount of cabinets that are in from other suppliers. You know, it's the amount of unbundled options that I've got mean that people are going to Sky, O2 and Virgin. And leaving BT, and the fibre to the cabinet, you know, the contractual obligations, you know, having to jump on an 18-month contract, no thanks. Especially when you've still got, you know, a lot of lockdowns on and how much you can download. And Sky and O2, for example, don't.
Yep. Okay, Race Online 2012. Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah, well, this is related to the British government have made this kind of woolier commitment to, you know, everybody with a 2 meg connection by 2012. So the UK digital champion, Martha Lane Fox, she launched her Networked Nation manifesto today. And what this is basically saying is she wants to get everybody in the UK online by 2012. Which is a lot harder to do than what they're doing in Finland. I think that we're currently around 73-75% internet penetration in the UK. So that's still quite a lot of people to get online. What Race Online's about isn't getting everybody, but it's getting everybody of a working age online by 2012. So the manifesto, and it's highlighting the lack of net access among disadvantaged, unemployed and retired. It's got the backing of the government. So David Cameron is definitely backing it and saying digital inclusion is essential. However, there's the one big problem with the whole thing, that there's no money behind this. So it's not getting a massive input from the government. And it's asking people to try and donate their time, equipment, organise events. It's almost like a volunteer service to get people online, which I don't think is a bad idea, actually. You know, I do think you're not going to get the private sector. They're not going to chase after, you know, that probably last sort of 5, 10, 15% of people.
It will come down to the, you know, the whether you know, it's all very well saying, well, here's a modem, here's the, just sign up to this broadband for X number of pounds per month and off you go. I mean, it's I guess for young working people, then it would seem like they would want that.
Obsessed.
What's that?
You're back on a young thing, you're obsessed.
The youth, yeah. So for some people, I can see how the internet is still very essential, but I still can't see some sectors of the community wanting it or even thinking it's particularly important.
Oh, no, I do agree. I mean, if I take my mum, if I said to her, I'll get you a laptop or get you an iPad or get you something that's online, why? What do I want with that? I would just look up the news on the TV. No, and it's just that, just, you know, her communication is all by phone.
It's funny, sometimes you just need a hook, don't you? I mean, I know with my parents for ages, they didn't go online or didn't want it, really. And then one day I told my dad to go and search eBay for these books that he collected. Suddenly he's been spending years trying to find books.
Right. I remember I was selling some stuff on behalf of my mother, and it was the same thing. You know, it was like, oh, how much is it going for? And there was a lot of excitement about it.
You mean I can just get it?
Yeah, fantastic. Yes, you can. And certainly when I show an HMV or an Amazon sale, so there's a lot of interest. The worst thing being that when I go onto Amazon now, it just thinks I'm looking for all these romance novels. It's not me.
Yeah. Based on your previous searches, yeah.
Yeah, I've already got Wizard of Oz as well. I don't need it again.
Yeah, I've had to almost delete some tragically bad searches just so they never pop up again.
That's a porn, Chris.
I searched for I can't remember what band it was once.
Oh, go on, and tell us.
I honestly can't remember.
Catch a Goo-Goo.
I blocked it, and I wouldn't tell you even if I did.
Adamant.
Anyway, right. So we've been chuffing on about how important the internet is generally and should be a service, but there is one person in this world that definitely doesn't agree.
Surely not.
And that one person is the artist who was formerly known as Prince, who now is known as Prince again.
It's Symbol.
So he said the internet is over. It was a fad, it was cool, and now it's gone.
Absolutely.
What the hell, what planet's he on?
Planet Prince.
Well, clearly.
So and a tie-up, certainly it was a Mirror in the UK, and I know it was other papers around the world, where he gave away his album. And obviously he's not giving it away. They're portraying it as he's giving it away for free, and you can, but obviously he's done a massive deal, you know, with all these different newspapers. But it's a quote. I don't know. Is he just in a bubble? Is he just like replacing, you know, Michael Jackson as the oddball?
I think he might be in the midst of a.
Or was this just publicity
promotion?
Yeah, I don't see why I should give my new music to iTunes or anyone else. They won't pay me in advance for it. And they get angry when they can't get it. The internet is like MTV. At one time, MTV was hip, and suddenly it became outdated. And I'm liking how he's telling this to the Mirror, as if the Mirror's some sort of hip place.
Yes, does he know who the Mirror is?
Exactly. And the best bit, all these computers and digital gadgets are no good. They just fill your head with numbers, and that can't be good for you. What an arse. To complete ours.
What Although, a wally.
I will admit, I have the album.
Did you buy the newspaper specially to get it?
I have the album.
Then the job is done. And I think he just said some of these things to get in, you know, and you get publicity from it, don't you?
The best bit about it is if somebody wants it now, it is on the internet. You know, this whole thing, and that's why I just think he's either delusional or daft.
Yeah, he's daft.
The best bit, some of the tracks are actually all right.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. It's, I'm as surprised as you. A couple of them were like, my God.
Ian Shocker announced, yeah.
Well, you stick to your Kajagoogoo and I'll listen to that new Prince album.
In phone news this week, Microsoft have announced that they are dropping the Kin. Well, in fact, they're not going to release it in Europe and they're going to stop making it in America. So Kin was their social phone, so they built it. I guess it was for the youth generation, so the it had Facebook and Twitter integration, things like that. So it wasn't really a smartphone, but it did social stuff. And they announced it to, you know, in big fanfare not very long ago, How many weeks ago was it we're talking about it?
Five, six weeks. Yep.
And now they have decided that they are going to stop. There were reports they had only sold about 503, but it looks like that actual figure was more like 8,000 odd of them.
Well, they're
still,
and it was. I think people latched onto that figure because it was John Gruber, so kind of Apple King fanboy, yeah, that said the 503. And it was a kind of a Windows loving site was like, no, it's actually 8,000. Here's the proof.
And it's actually 8,000, because that is so much better.
As I wrote the notes, that's just a different way of saying fail. It's, you know, it just doesn't. I mean, Androids, I think they're up at 160,000 devices there a day that they're activating. You know, iPhone 4 was 1.7 million in, 3 days?
We were talking just before we actually started recording that Microsoft have been making some very strange decisions recently, and if I was a shareholder of Microsoft, I would feel uneasy at the moment, because they don't seem to be. I mean, Windows they got right, but everything else that we've heard about recently, they don't seem to be getting right at all.
Yeah, and even this idea that the youth market wants something different, you know, like kids are not going to want one of these smartphones. They want an iPhone. You know, they've wanted an iPhone since iPhones have come out. That's what they want. And now they're getting, if they don't get an iPhone, they're getting one of the Android phones.
But I guess what the point is, it's not, they want an iPhone, but they can't afford it. So what can they have that they can afford? And I think that's more the point of what the kid was supposed to be.
Yeah, but when this came out, it was the same price. So we'll give you we'll give you this kind of cut down phone, which is cool and hip, and you can do all these things with it. But we're going to charge the same price, and then you know within a few days the price started to drop. It's now down at half price just to get rid of the stock.
Yeah,
total disaster. And the best thing was even though they'd announced they'd stopped it, and there was a whole lot of people thought this is madness. At the same time, they were still running ad campaigns for it. and you know, it just looks like a company that's just in certain areas. You know, Windows 7, as you said, that they're really getting right. And the Xbox side of things, again, it's looking fairly good. And I guess we need to wait and see what happens with the new Windows 7 series phone, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they've said they're concentrating on now, isn't it? They want to concentrate on that, which is a sensible thing to concentrate on. I mean, whatever you say about Bill Gates, he did have a vision, and I think that's what seems to be missing, that vision.
And he is very generous. And he was a thief, but apart from that.
Someone else who's a thief of our signal.
this winds me up, this story.
So this is the ongoing signal issues that the new iPhone 4 has.
Yes.
Or hasn't got, depending on who you listen to.
Yes. So Apple, after a whole load of... And I guess that the problem was on day one of the iPhone coming out, people started noticing a problem that if you covered the bottom, basically the bottom part of it, and more critically, if you just actually covered this little band in the bottom left corner, the signal dropped away, the data dropped away, and it was all, you know, demonstrable. Everybody could see it. What's kind of come out since then is if you're in a strong signal area, you don't tend to see it as much, which probably explains why I'm not seeing it as much, because I do tend to get a good signal here. And instead of coming out and saying, we've got an issue and we're going to investigate it, they started saying, put a bumper on it. Don't hold it that way. So those kind of really cocky, arrogant statements that see when it's about a competitor, or see when it's about, you know, protecting market or whatever, sound, oh, fair enough, that's just Steve doing his thing. But see when it's about a product that people are saying is faulty, and he's saying, don't be daft, just don't use it that way. I think it's pretty responsible and pretty bad PR for them. So it's rumbled on, and then I think it was the middle of last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
they issued out a statement, and I need to read some of these. I need to read some of this out. It's class. I can't let it go.
It's good storytelling.
So to start with, and this is Apple's words, to start with, gripping almost any mobile phone in certain ways will reduce its reception by one or more bars. This is true of iPhone 4, iPhone 3GS, as well as many Droid, Nokia and RIM phones. But some users have reported that iPhone 4 can drop 4 or 5 bars when tightly held in a way which covers the black strip in the lower left corner of the metal band. This is a far bigger drop than normal, and as a result, some have accused the iPhone 4 of having a faulty antenna design. Not us. Not us was actually me saying that. So that's the way, and you're reading it and you're thinking, has this been written by a 5-year-old? It's the whole, you know, Jack and Ori that they've written. We have discovered, so I'm back in Apple mode now, we have discovered the cause of this dramatic drop in bars, and it is both simple and surprising. Upon investigation...
Come on, spin it up, spin it
we
up.
We were stunned, I didn't need to emphasise that, stunned, to find that the formula we use to calculate how many bars of signal strength to display is totally wrong. Our formula, in many instances, mistakenly displays two more bars than it should for a given signal strength. Translated, we've been caught. We've been conning everybody for the last 3 years, and now it's come back to bite us.
The story...
Unbelievable.
That particular line of that story is...
Stunned.
It doesn't help on either way. Because it does imply that they have been boosting their signal bars. So.
As soon as I read this, I just thought straight away that they've been caught. You know, they've used it. And what's quite interesting is watching... I watched Matt Break Weekly, which is an American podcast, last week. And Leo Laporte, who hosts, he does love his Apple products, but recently he's been, you know, looking at Android and thinking Android's the way I want to go for a phone. And he's given it they've been caught. They've been cheating us for the last 2-3 years, but a couple other guys in the panel, you've no evidence of that. And it's like, you've no evidence to say they've not either. it just smacks of being at it for the last 2-3 years.
Nevertheless, it doesn't really matter whether it was displaying the right number of bars or not. The sheer fact of the matter was that, as you say, there's video evidence. There's people showing you that, you know, they're downloading, they cover the strip, they're not downloading anymore.
No, absolutely. And I guess there's a couple of things to that. So to round off the actual statement, so Apple, we have gone back to our labs and retested everything, and the results are the same. The iPhone 4's wireless performance is the best we've ever shipped. And I've got to be honest, I generally didn't really drop calls before, but I'm getting good reception, and other people I know that did have issues before are getting good reception now.
Yeah.
So it does seem to be better reception. For the vast majority of users who have not been troubled by this issue, this software update will only make your bars more accurate. For those who have had concerns, we apologise for any anxiety we may have caused. So what they're doing is they're going to issue an update in the next few weeks, which will more accurately reflect the bars and the signal you're receiving. And a couple of interesting things is that they talk about they're going to use this new AT&T formula. And I don't understand. They're all focusing because it's American PR release. It's American, issue they're dealing with. But it's worldwide this is happening on. So I don't know how that affects O2, Vodafone, Orange. And they've also said, as a reminder, see if you're not fully satisfied, take the phone back. Get your refund. And they're also, they have a restocking fee, which they've taken away. So I think there was was it 5 or 10% was a restocking fee. If you returned it before and they've taken that away. So if you don't like it, take it back if you've got issues.
And I guess they're pretty confident that people aren't going to do that.
No, and that's the thing. I think this is a PR issue. There are people who I would not normally associate with knowing tech. They maybe know me at work or they know me as a friend to say that he's into his gadgets, but they're coming up to me and saying, oh, you've got that iPhone with a really bad reception problem. You've got the iPhone that needs a death grip. Ha 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 ha.
Yes, it's amazing how it flows. Like I say, we said last week that the iPhone is so far beyond just a tech and gadget news story. It's a much bigger thing than that. And the story's flowed into the everyday news channels.
And you made a point before. We were talking probably around about Christmas time and some of the Nexus One stuff was coming out. And you were saying it's all right when Apple are ahead, but what happens when they start to slip up? What it's inevitably will do.
They haven't got a backup plan.
Well, you just start to look, you know, there are other options out there now. And it's the same, you know, that you can't go and buy an iPhone right now. There's still queues for iPhones. There's still people struggling to get them. Just go and get an Android. And I can see more people doing that now. So I still think Apple have conned us for the last few years. And I just thought the whole thing stinks. Still stinks.
Yeah, and it still seems like they're kind of saying there's no problem when there generally is a kind of problem. Okay, it might be that it's emphasized by the fact that the signal isn't showing correctly. At the end of the day, the antenna probably shouldn't be quite that exposed to your hand.
No. And there's another post I read somewhere that says if you can make a bumper that covers this up, and it just seems very convenient that the first time they decide to do a bumper, the first time they invest in a case,
was for
a device that aesthetically looks amazing and is looks wonderful, and they're now saying just buy a bumper.
Yeah.
You know, and if they'd wrapped that in a bit of plastic, would anybody be that fussed?
Yep. Agreed. So let's get on to our little orphaned story. It's on its own.
Couldn't find a home, could it?
No. So we found it one here. And that is that Section 44. So that is the section of the law which gives the police rights to stop and search. And they can do that for any reason. That section has been revoked. They no longer have that right.
Woo!
Hey, they only have the right to stop someone if they can reasonably suspect that they are terrorists. Apparently, I'm not sure how you reasonably suspect that one.
Yeah, but common sense.
Yeah,
and I'm still not convinced about a Tory government, but there does seem to be quite a lot of common sense running around them at the moment. Just certain things like this, it should never have been passed as a law before. And it just makes sense to kind of like get rid of nonsense like this.
Yeah, agreed.
So well done. Well done, the coalition government.
Indeed.
I'll go and wash my mouth out now.
So we're on to a section that we're kind of loosely going to call the internet section, I think, right today.
Now you do sound old.
Yeah.
This is a section all about the internet.
So we got a couple of Google stories, and the first one I've not heard about this, but it's called Life in a Day. So I don't know if you want to take us through that.
Yeah. So July 24th, they're asking people if they can capture just a bit of your day, a snapshot of part of your day, and it could be something ordinary, it could be extraordinary. So they've given examples like a sunrise, commute to work, a football match. Baby first step. So there's a whole lot of other things that it could be. And they're asking you to submit it to a specific YouTube channel called Life in a Day. I guess the interesting bit about it is Kevin MacDonald, who's the Oscar-winning director of Last King of Scotland, and he's done quite a number of other well-known films. He's going to edit the footage, and he'll pick out the ones, obviously, that he finds interesting or makes the most sense, and he'll put together a feature film on it, which will be executive produced by Ridley Scott. I've never really known what an executive producer really does, but it's Ridley Scott.
I don't think anyone knows what the producers do.
No, it's like, are you just a name?
They put a bit of money in and they get a name and a credit.
Yeah. So, you might think, well, fine, it'll be a film made, but the film will premiere at next year's Sundance Film Festival. And if your footage makes it into the final cut, you'll be credited as a co-director. And you may be one of the 20 contributors selected to attend the premiere. So, very nice.
It's one of those things, again, which I think this has only really become possible recently with the fact that a lot of people now have the ability to capture video on all their different devices. And YouTube's there now where everyone can upload to. So it's only recently become possible that you can actually, take one day and get people to submit everything you can think about it. I mean, I don't know who's going to go through all the blooming millions of clips.
It's scary what gets uploaded to YouTube right now.
Yeah, the amount of data that can go up there in however it's much tremendous. Time. It was ridiculous amounts, isn't it? But so, and I think people are quite, willing to share, bits like of their life, especially if they get to pick which bits they want to share.
So mark in your diary, July 24th. With things like, with all the latest Android phones, with the iPhone, with most of the latest Nokias, it's HD video you're capturing. And, you know, it's pictures at a really good resolution now.
Yeah, I mean, if it had been technology, you know, even 2-3 years ago, you wouldn't be able to make a film out of it.
A couple of years ago, you could have done it, but it would be like a film for the web. It's not going to be a quality that you could take to a cinema and show.
I'm actually being a best man on the 24th of July.
Well, there you go.
I don't think I'm going to have time to film it, though.
Oh, come on. You've got a phone in your pocket.
Only a 3G, and it doesn't have a video.
Yeah, but it's 2 weeks before the 24th.
I'm not going to buy a new phone just so I can record it. Anyway. July 24th. Okay.
But somebody else could record you being a best man.
Yeah, maybe it already be filmed. And then it'd probably be subject to copyright, wouldn't it? Google App Inventor for Android. So this is an application, and it's in Google Labs, I believe. So it's one of their labs projects. And it's a development environment that's very much WYSIWYG. So what you see is what you get. Basically, you can drag and drop buttons and things into an environment and tell them what you want those buttons to do. And again, I'm always a bit skeptical about this, but without knowing, you know, programming language, you should be able to make Android applications. Again, I'm a little bit skeptical as to how deep that goes, but I think, am I right in this aimed at kids, someone starting out maybe in programming,
it's aimed at the novice. You know, so somebody's got an idea, they should be able to put together it looks like a simple app using this tool.
I'm always skeptical when it's the same as when, you know, someone like Flash comes along and says, you know, you can, as a designer, you can come and make a fully featured website. It's always compromised, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see what does come out of it and say, well, just an interesting concept anyway.
Well, and I put in two lines. So it takes away barrier of entry. So I don't need to pay anything. I'm onto a free website. I guess I'm limited by ideas, and fair enough, I don't think it'll be able to do everything. And I'm sure there's a lot of things you'll be limited in what you can and can't do. Because it says it requires no programming. Straight away, I think, well, there's a whole load of things that I need to program to get it to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
But in some ways, it's just really good because it's about, and I think back to the, you know, when I was a kid, you know, with my Amstrad and friends had Spectrums, and you were writing bits of code and copying out of magazines. And, you know, is this a way of getting people back into it? You know, it's just really simple, don't need much hardware, and I can start developing for what looks like the market to aim for now. Mobile phones looks to be the easy target market, because the distribution's far easier than a desktop. But the only minus side is, and I've deliberately used this app as an example, is at the front page for Android. You know, I saw elsewhere people saying Dreamweaver. The Dreamweaver's not that bad an app, but its front page was an absolute horror.
I totally agree, and that's exactly the same view as I have, which is, yes, front page may kind of give you what you kind of wanted, but if you look in the background, it does it in a...
Give you a really shudder. You know, I only maybe saw it 2 or 3 times through my either inside or outside work of people using front page, and every time was just like, Jesus.
I shall rewrite this for you.
Yeah, that's just, it was easier than trying to make it do what they wanted it to do while still using front page.
And to be honest, Dreamweaver was the same. If a designer came along and used Dreamweaver, then they'd end up with code that, okay, it was probably a little bit better structured, but
it was better structured than front page.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. You can't get worse. Okay, and a very breaking story, which I have, again, I don't really know about, but this is only just broken, so I don't feel so bad about that.
So,
and that's it.
I'm just saying so because it sounds like you're just about to say so, Ian.
Yeah, I am going to. That's exactly what I was going to say.
So I'm sure everyone knows Fring. So Fring is a IM service that's allowed, but it also integrates into other IM services. So you can use Fring on its own, or else you can put in your credentials for MSM and Skype and I think Yahoo and I think they're all there.
Everything's in there.
So obviously with the new iPhone, we also got video chat. And Fring last week announced an update which allowed you to do video chat either Fring to Fring or Skype to Skype. And interestingly, it wasn't just Wi-Fi like FaceTime from Apple, but it was on 3G as well. So So very pixely. And I'm not going to sit here and say it was the best thing ever and it was a bit laggy and the voice was worse than if you just did a voice call. But it still worked. And it worked over 3G.
Which the Skype one is going to charge for soon, isn't it?
Yes.
I think.
So it was a very popular upgrade. If you look at the Fring blog, they actually quoted just how many, you know, new apps were downloaded, and also just the bandwidth that it took up was phenomenal. You know, so obviously it's a thing that people are looking for. So I'm just looking it up now. Since adding 2-way video calling in iPhone 4 yesterday, we have seen another huge jump in Fring video calling. And they're just saying it so much so that they're having to temporarily reduce support for third-party Skype. And that's all they said. Just said, thanks for your patience. But if you're on Fring, carry on. Hope you love this. And a lot of people did. You know, it just all of a sudden made it a lot more usable. But then, just before we started tonight, Fring put out another statement saying Skype have blocked Fring and threatened legal action against the startup. So they said, they put out that statement, put it on their blog, and then an hour later, Skype put out a blog statement, and it was their legal representative saying, Fring's reported this in their blog that we've blocked access to Skype. Skype are making one thing absolutely clear, this is untrue. Fring was using Skype software in a way it wasn't designed to be used, and in a way which is in breach of Skype's API terms of use. We've been talking with Fring for some time to try and resolve this amicably. However, over time, Fring's misuse of our software was increasingly damaging our brand and reputation. On Friday, for example, Fring withdrew support for video calls over Skype and iOS 4 without warning, again damaging our brand and disappointing our customers. And then it's just more blah, blah, blah. All it finishes up with, there's no truth to Fring's claims that Skype have bought it. Fring have made a decision to remove Skype functionality on its own. And I guess what this, I think, is going to rumble on. I think what we'll find is that it's maybe made a decision to remove it on its own because Skype have asked for XYZ.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe these things will come more clear over the week or so. But I find it hard to believe that Skype as a brand can be damaged by a third-party app temporarily removing.
Yeah, but maybe the damage was people saying to Skype, if a third party can do it, why can't you?
Yeah.
And that whole negative wave of, you know what it's like, once a little bandwagon starts with forum posts or in a blog post somewhere, it just rolls and rolls, and then it turns into a news item somewhere.
Indeed.
And just, I think it's worth mentioning, because I was going to put it in, but it was just too much, iChatter came out for the iPhone. iChatter is basically chat roulette for the iPhone.
Right, okay.
So everybody said it was inevitable, and yeah, sure enough it is. You see your video in the top, somebody else's video in the bottom, swipe to get somebody else new. Just like chat roulette.
I wonder if there's any monitoring of it.
What was that?
I wonder if there's any monitoring of it.
None at all.
No?
Just like chat roulette.
So there'll be equally as many members and their members, probably.
Yes. Well, interestingly, the guy behind chat roulette was trying to write a bit of software that would detect penises.
And fast forward through.
So you could filter them out. So you could select a little checkbox.
You had to tick box. Nice. We have seen some YouTube updates this week, specifically to their mobile delivery. So if you go to m.youtube.com, you now get from the actual website, you get a sort of a nice UI, loads quicker. And it's done via HTML5, or at least the tags are in there for HTML5. And from what people are saying, the actual the performance of the site is better than the actual applications that come with mobile devices.
Much better. Well, I can't say that about Android, but certainly an iPhone, much better.
I imagine that they use the same code base for that delivery.
Yeah. Well, and specifically the reason why it's better is that the iPhone app is basically assuming you're going to be getting a video over Edge. And they're just using a lot more modern codecs and video delivery for their web app. So you get a much better video quality. So never mind the extra functionality, because it's now using... you know, previously, YouTube used to have the kind of 5-star rating, and now it's just a kind of like system. Which the web app uses and the iPhone app doesn't, so that never got updated in iOS 4. I don't know if that's more to do with just the kind of the fallout over time with Google and Apple. But this is, it's far better. There are some issues similar with the iPhone one, which I can't remember, which they're saying they're going to fix. But this, it is the future. You're going to see more and more companies just saying, well, why am I going to have an Android app and a Windows app and an iOS app? Certainly there'll be some apps that are always going to be an app, but there's a lot of them are just like rebranding web content.
It's kind of the argument over, you know, that having a dedicated application can make certain processes and functionality easier to develop, because web technology, although it is now getting closer and closer to desktop type technologies, it's not there yet. I think we'll see with HTML5 that we're getting much, you know, almost indistinguishable for most everyday tasks that you want to do. But this, you know, it suddenly means that you don't have to keep worrying about updating apps and things like that, because that's taken out of your hands, and apps might just end up being, as they can already be, just bookmarks to, you know, dedicated websites. And as you say, that can work across the iPhone, it can work across Android or any future devices. And obviously Google are pushing this because of their new operating system, which we still don't know a release date on, but obviously that's going to rely heavily on web-based applications.
Yep. I still, as I said, there's still certain things, probably certainly focus on gaming, and there'll be probably other intuitive ones that you need to maybe need to edit local content that are going to still be better to be actual apps.
But I think the web's now got data stuff licked, hasn't it? And data display and
absolutely,
and front end type stuff. But you're right, gaming will never be native to a website, I think.
No.
Okay, we have a panic button added to Facebook.
Don't panic.
So this is an application you can install onto Facebook. It's designed for young people to install onto their Facebook, and they can use the panic button to report any indecent approaches that they may receive. We've had panic buttons on other social sites.
So Bebo had it, and MySpace had it.
And so it's kind of just the next step along that thing. I'm not sure how it works for Facebook. I thought you had to friend someone on Facebook to.
Yeah, and I think this is the point that Facebook have made before, that they believe they've got their own steps and processes in place that makes this less of an issue. However, I guess this is the thing where it gets a bit grey. So everybody's kind of reporting that there's now a panic button for under 18s. But it's opt-in. So
you install it like you install an application, as I understand.
So it's not like a system-wide by default, this is there. But I think also there's been more pressure. I mean, BBC mentioned a case. So the pressure mounted in Facebook following the rape and murder of 70-year-old Ashley Hall by a 33-year-old convicted sex offender who was posing as a teenage boy who she met on Facebook. So it's one of these things that I think, but if something's going to be bad, it's not, you know, Facebook, it's almost acting as just an easy facilitator. A panic button probably wouldn't have helped.
You know, it'd be interesting to know what that panic button actually does. I mean, if it's going to start getting people investigated, there's plenty of people that could just press it for the sheer hell of it.
And I guess that's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on it. I think it's one of those things where, you know, there's no reason not to have it. And actually, with Facebook opening up all its privacy and making people's stuff, you know, by default much more open to searching, I think it has become more important to be able to have features in place, I guess.
And I think we do need to see more. I mean, as I said, the press were reporting this as a panic button, and Facebook then started going around them saying it's not a panic button, it's an app.
No, I think panic button is the wrong.
It's an app. I don't know what the app is opt-in. So it's up to you to choose to put it in or not, and it's about reporting back some information about how you stay safe. Whereas other ones are certainly more there is a panic button and it is a reporting link. So time will tell.
And final story that we're going to cover this week.
Surely not finally already.
Not the final story. We haven't finished yet. But that is that Amazon of books are now going to start selling groceries.
Indeed.
Which is a bit of a right turn at that roundabout. Still in beta at the moment, but they have got 22,000 products odd showing. It's not sort of designed yet to be your replacement for, say, a Tesco's shop. A lot of them are bulk buys and things like that, and they're not necessarily coming in at as cheap as you could get it from the supermarket, let's say.
No.
But it shows their intent to broaden their horizons. Oh,
definitely. Definitely. Another the other thing that's, I guess, interesting is a supermarket will charge, you know, between £4 and £6 roughly for delivery.
Yep.
And what Amazon are promoting is, well, sign up to Amazon Prime, pay us £49 a year. I do know a few people that use this now. Pay £49 a year and you've got unlimited free one-day deliveries.
Yep.
And it doesn't take... I actually need to probably top up how much I order from them over a year. I'm probably not a kick in the teeth off paying that per year anyway.
In fact, it's worth discussing Amazon Prime in general because it is a great service, especially if you buy a fair amount of stuff.
Have you signed up to them?
I haven't, and I nearly did at Christmas because I think it would have just about broken even. But I think you can share your account with someone else as well.
Interesting.
So that makes it, you know, that halves the cost again. So it's worth definitely having a look at that.
There's so many that, you know, so many times throughout the year I probably get something from Amazon.
I mean, most of the time I'm not bothered about getting it next day, though. That would be my only
It would just make it, I guess it would make it. See if I was a home worker. See if I was working from home. I'd just be signing up to that in an instant. Because then I could just say I want that for tomorrow and it'd be here.
It gets frightening, though. It's a frightening new world.
It's frightening anyway.
Then, yeah.
He says, sitting in front of his new mic.
I would like a kebab tomorrow, please.
Yeah, but you could just put your shoes on and walk down the street and get a kebab.
That involves exercise and all sorts of stuff, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you need to do something. Kebabs in Mount Up. I've seen the photos.
They do indeed. They do indeed. So let's quickly move on to our picks then, and let's round off the show. So my pick this week is for a newly released bit of software. Well, it's the latest one in the series, and it's called Zara Photo and Graphic Designer 6. Now, Zara have been making software, and I have been buying their software for a long, long time now. I'm talking 15, maybe even longer years. And it is basically, it starts out as, it's effectively a vector graphics program. So along the Illustrator or CorelDRAW type lines. But it's a very, very lightweight bit of kit, and its biggest selling point has always been it's very, very easy to use, very intuitive, and it's also blindingly fast. And it's also dead cheap. So the new version is only £69, and that's including VAT. But it's just a great bit of software, and it's very undiscovered. So it's one of those gems that not a lot of people have heard about. So they've made it faster. They've given it, they've updated its look and feel. They've made it feel much more modern, and they've added some great new features. And it's really very, very good as a vector graphics package, but also as a photo manipulation and layout tool. So it's worth having a look at. If you buy the pro version, which costs a bit more, so that's £249, it also comes with a ton of web development tools. So effectively you can draw a website and it will create all the code for you. In the same way, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that for big production sites. It is amazing what you can actually end up achieving with it. There you go. That's Zara Photo and Graphic Designer. Go to www.xara.com.
A wee question. When we were doing Forza Leaks, was that the bit of software you used to do the vector art?
That probably was, yes. Yeah. Seeing as it is my vector bit of software of choice.
Interesting, because I was so envious of how quickly you took a certain sketch from a friend of ours and turned it into a logo, and it was a great logo. Forza Leaks.
There you go.
Glory days.
they were the wasted days.
Glory days. Not like this podcaster.
Full of big ideas, eh?
I must get back to my iPhone programming. Anyway, I guess I'll do my pick.
Yes, please.
I'd love to say it's not an iPad game.
I would love you to say it wasn't, but I believe it is.
No, it is. It's a game called, well, I'm assuming it's pronounced Osmos.
I would pronounce that Osmos, yeah.
No doubt we'll find out from elsewhere that it's not. But it's one of these, you know, really simple games, but it's lovely to both look at, listen to, and play. And basically, you're a little orb, and you need to absorb smaller orbs to make your orb bigger to absorb the bigger orbs. So it seems like that sounds very simple, but there's a whole load of gravity effects come into play, and some of the levels get massive. And at the same time, you can speed up and slow down time. And there's a whole load of orbital patterns in place. And it's just one of these ones, and you need to see it to understand it and then just love it.
Is it only iPad or is it on the
iPhone? Originally actually came out, I'm sure, as a PC and Mac game.
Ah, okay.
So I think if you go and look up the actual, I guess I could do that instead of being lazy. Osmos PC and Mac, what do we get? Yeah, Hemisphere Games, Osmos, PC, Mac and Linux. So you could actually take a look. I wonder if it's one of these things that's on Steam as well, probably.
No, I imagine it probably is.
You know, there's just so many of these things. And I'm looking at it now. It's obviously garnered great reviews. And it is lovely. And the iPad one's come out, and a lot of people are saying it is the best iPad game out there, and it is up there. Very, very nice.
I've been playing games on my iPhone again recently. I've been playing Patience. All handheld computers just need to have patience, and that keep me happy.
I've been playing, what is it? Flick It, the football one, which was only 59p. So better just, Osmos is £2.99 of your UK pounds.
We should probably do an iPhone and an iPad, what apps we've got installed update on the site, shouldn't we? We haven't done that for a while.
I was going to say, if we do a podcast, that'll be about 6 hours for me.
We could even do a special section of podcasting, can we?
Yeah, there's loads.
For the future.
There's loads. And okay. I was actually thinking we might do a photography one soon as well, just as a kind of special one-off, if you don't like it, don't listen type thing.
I think we should do that. I've got a couple of articles we could do on that.
Yeah, so
okay, all for future then. Exciting times.
Big ideas.
Yes. If you would like to find out more about our podcast, you can at www.digitaloutbox.com. You can always email us info@digitaloutbox.com. We are on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. Ian, where can we find out more if we would like to know more about you?
My blog is ind.net. I am on Twitter as Shweeper.
And my Twitter is CheesyUK. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
It is Monday, the 12th of July, and you're listening to Digital Outbox. So I've completely cocked up.
We need to keep that one.
I'll just go straight back in again. It is Monday, the 12th of July, and you're listening to episode 54 of Digital Outbox.
I can cut my giggles out.
Am I going to have to do that again?
Yes.
It is Monday. No. This isn't hard. Right. It is. No, it's not.